Christian groups and fans of Marilyn Manson went head-to-head just before tonight's concert. Members of the Citizens for Decency in America held banners that read, "He's coming soon and hell is real."
Why, you know, so now I think that I've been blamed for about 36 school shootings.
I didn't remove my rib.
Well, no, that's
I wasn't on a Wonder Years.
Okay, was it?
So you can stock those stuff.
That was
those
okay.
Ones are easy.
Okay, those two are too easy, right?
I consider myself an artist more than a musician, and I think the music and how people are affected by it, and my performance, and me speaking to people, all of that together adds up to what Marilyn Manson is.
You are listening to the Marilyn Manson Cases Podcast, the podcast discussing the accusations, lawsuits, and legal news surrounding shock rocker Marilyn Manson. Please note topics include allegations of abuse, some may find disturbing.
Welcome to the Marilyn Manson Cases Podcast. My name is Lisa, better known as the Manson Cases on social media, and you can also find me at themansoncases.com. Today, I will be talking about the Jane Doe lawsuit filed against Brian Hugh Warner, professionally known as Marilyn Manson. With a trial coming up on October 3rd, 2023, less than a month away, I realized her lawsuit has largely been forgotten about by mainstream media. So, instead of providing updates from the legal cases this past summer, today's episode will focus only on this lawsuit. Before I delve into the legal intricacies, it's essential to broadly summarize what Jane Doe's allegations entail. Jane Doe's lawsuit alleges that Marilyn Manson used his celebrity status, power, and connections to exploit and victimize her during and after their alleged short relationship in 2011. What she alleges started as a consensual romantic relationship quickly devolved into a cycle of abuse and torment, and alleges Manson's purported tactics of control were evident early on. Jane Doe alleges it first started when she went to his residence under the pretense of a movie night with an assistant, Ashley Walters, who was present as a chaperone. But soon after, she alleges Manson's behavior turned aggressive, showering her with compliments while imposing restrictions on her movements and clothing choices. As their alleged relationship progressed, she claims Manson's control escalated. Some examples from her lawsuit include monitoring her every move and demanding rapid responses to his texts and calls, controlling her living arrangements, effectively moving her into his apartment while she continued to own a duplex. The darkness and cold in his apartment further isolated her, and Manson dictated when she could eat. She also states the manipulation did not stop there. Jane Doe goes on to allege that Manson made it known that his fans were obsessive, which intimidated her into compliance. It's alleged in this lawsuit that he played on his reputation and power, belittling her and making her feel inferior. According to Jane Doe, a significant turning point in the relationship was the infamous Groupie video, an unreleased short art horror film Manson created in the 90s. Jane Doe alleges Manson coerced her into watching a disturbing video of him engaging in degrading and violent acts towards a young fan. This event, as detailed in the lawsuit, marked a clear shift towards alleging more aggressive behavior, and goes further to detail deeply distressing accounts of sexual abuse. Jane Doe describes instances of non-consensual sex, forced sexual acts, and violent behavior from Manson. The suit also alleges that Manson's alleged control extended to the bedroom, with him demanding sex at all hours, interrupting her sleep, and forced oral and vaginal rape. The lawsuit vividly portrays a series of alleged traumatic events that Jane Doe claims transpired. She even alleges Manson threatened her life and boasted about escaping consequences due to his fame. According to Jane Doe, it was not until February 2021 when news coverage of the accusations against Manson triggered her memory of the abuse she claims to have endured. This revelation led her to report her alleged experiences to law enforcement. In short, she claims to have repressed her memories of sexual assault and abuse as early as July 3, 2011, an oddly specific date. She then goes on to say that between July 3, 2011 and up to February 2, 2021, that she does remember crying herself to sleep at his apartment, and also goes on to claim she did not repress her memories when it came to abusive aspects in the relationship, as she claims she allegedly remembers bruising she experienced when having consensual sex with Manson. Moving forward, I want to dissect each of the four causes of action presented in the case, But before we dive into those details, let me clarify a fundamental concept. What is a cause of action? A cause of action is a legal claim that serves as the basis for a lawsuit. It outlines the alleged wrongdoings and provides the legal grounds for seeking remedies in court. In other words, it's the legal argument that the plaintiff presents to demonstrate why they deserve compensation or relief. Now, what does it mean to seek remedies in court? When someone claims they've suffered harm due to another person's actions, they can file a lawsuit to seek remedies or solutions to address the harm they've allegedly endured. These remedies can come in various forms. One common remedy is seeking monetary compensation, known as damages. These can be economic damages, like medical bills or lost wages, or non-economic damages, such as pain and suffering. In some cases, a person may ask the court for an injunction, a court order that requires the defendant to do something or refrain from certain actions. For instance, in cases involving harassment or stalking, a court might issue a restraining order to prevent further contact. Another type of remedy is known as declaratory relief. This relief seeks a declaration from the court about the rights and responsibilities of the parties involved. It clarifies the legal position on a specific issue. For this lawsuit, Jane Doe is claiming she has suffered harm due to Manson's alleged actions. The four causes of action provide the legal framework to support her claims as she is seeking compensatory and punitive damages. In other words, she is seeking monetary compensation. Now let me break down each cause of action. The first cause of action centers on alleged sexual assaults using California's Code of Civil Procedure, Section 340.16. This law allows a victim to recover damages suffered as a result of sexual assault, where the assault occurred after the plaintiff's 18th birthday, so long as the action is commenced within 10 years from the date of the last act of sexual assault, or within 3 years from the date the victim discovers or reasonably should have discovered an injury or illness resulted from an act of sexual assault, whichever is later. In reference to this cause of action, this is what Jane Doe has stated as facts in her lawsuit as it relates to sexual assault. First, she claims she had no memory of the alleged sexual assaults for years until February 2021, when the memories allegedly resurfaced. This includes not remembering forced oral sex and vaginal rape. Second, Jane Doe also asserts that she experienced ongoing vaginal pain for years. Initially, her doctors couldn't diagnose the issue and suggested it might be psychological, repeatedly asking if she had been sexually assaulted. She couldn't recall these events, even when asked directly. Next, she states that over the past decade, she claims to have had multiple nightmares about Marilyn Manson, but none featuring the alleged sexual assaults. She says she had no way of knowing about the alleged assaults until early 2021, when her memories allegedly returned. On February 1, 2021, Jane Doe's management company employee informed her about multiple women accusing Marilyn Manson of sexual assault. She woke up to this text, read news articles about the accusations, and claims to have remembered the alleged abusive aspects of her relationship with Manson, including bruising during consensual sex and being forced to watch the groupie video. The second cause of action is for alleged interference of Jane Doe's civil rights as it relates to the violation of the Bain Act. The Bain Act, also known as California Civil Code Section 52.1, is a statute that prohibits any person or persons from interfering with individuals' rights secured under the Constitution and laws of California and the United States through threats, intimidation, or coercion. In her legal complaint, Jane Doe claims that Manson used or attempted to use these tactics with the intent to interfere with her civil rights. These rights encompass fundamental aspects like personal liberty, bodily autonomy, and protection from sexual assault. Jane Doe further asserts that Manson's position of power within the industry in which she aspired to work exerted substantial pressure on her to comply with his demands. She contends that Manson knew about this pressure and exploited it to intimidate and coerce her. The essence of Jane Doe's Bain Act claim is that Manson's actions aimed to deprive her of her civil rights. She maintains that, as a result of Manson's alleged conduct, she suffered harm. And she argues that Manson's alleged actions were carried out with elements of oppression, fraud, and/or malice. In relation to this specific cause of action, Jane Doe alleges that during a specific period, Manson went on a drug and alcohol-fueled bender for 3 days, screaming and repeatedly threatening both her and Manson's former personal assistant, Ashley Walters. She then claims that Manson made an explicit threat to kill her. He allegedly expressed his intention to bash her head in and asserted that he would get away with it because of his celebrity status and purported connections with the police. On March 8, 2021, she alleges that she spoke to law enforcement officers regarding her experiences with Manson, and that during her preparation for this meeting, she claims memories resurfaced about Manson making death threats to her following her rape. Significantly, she claims not to have recalled these alleged death threats between at least July 3, 2011, at the latest, and March 7, 2021. Moving forward, the third cause of action alleges sexual battery under California law. This means that, according to her claims, Manson intended to cause harmful or offensive contact with specific intimate body parts, such as the sexual organ, anus, groin, buttocks, or breast, resulting in what she alleges as sexually offensive contact or creating imminent fear of such contact. She is basically saying that she did not provide consent in certain situations, such as the alleged rape, and asserts that she experienced harm or offense due to the defendant's actions. The last cause of action that Jane Doe is suing for intentional infliction of emotional distress. In California, this type of claim is often associated with actions that provoke severe emotional harm, and it may include threats of physical harm or unwanted contact intended to incite fear and emotional distress in the victim. In Jane Doe's case, she alleges that Manson engaged in a series of actions that caused her immense suffering, anguish, fright, and anxiety. Under California law, intentional infliction of emotional distress claims may be pursued when the defendant's conduct goes beyond mere negligence or recklessness and reaches a level of extreme and outrageous behavior. Basically, Jane Doe is asserting that Manson's alleged actions meet this threshold. In summary, Jane Doe's lawsuit outlines four causes of action against Manson, with each one addressing different aspects of her alleged experiences. In all, these four causes of action encompass sexual assault, sexual battery, violation of the Bain Act, and intentional infliction of emotional distress. Through her prayer for relief, Jane Doe is seeking various remedies. She requests a declaration that Manson's actions breach California law, judgment in her favor on all claims, full compensatory damages for her suffering and distress, punitive damages, attorney fees, pre- and post-judgment interest, and any other relief deemed equitable and just by the court. Essentially, Jane Doe asserts that Manson's alleged actions meet the threshold for these legal claims and is seeking legal recognition and remedies to address the harm she claims to have endured. And as of the time I am recording this, the trial date is set for October 3rd, 2023 at 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. Moving forward, let's explore the specific challenges Jane Doe may face as it relates to the allegations made in her lawsuit. First, Jane Doe encounters several significant challenges. She must provide evidence demonstrating that Manson's alleged actions align with the legal standards for the offenses she has outlined, and cases involving alleged abuse or misconduct often rely on tangible proof, such as photographs, medical records, or other corroborative evidence. Second, she asserts the alleged incidents involving Manson have led to the repression of certain memories, which will likely be a central issue. According to Jane Doe, these purported memories are linked to the alleged abuse she suffered at the hands of Manson, and she also has to prove what she is saying, that she suffered from trauma and repressed memories. Because she claims to have experienced a form of psychological trauma, it would not be unexpected for her to undergo a psychological evaluation similar to what Amber Heard had to go through, which could help her case or hurt her, especially if she is found to be feigning a mental illness. Furthermore, it is possible her credibility is going to be center stage, in part because Manson's allegations against Evan Rachel Wood and Ilma Gore could potentially influence Jane Doe's trial, as well as her past public statements made which were widely reported on in the media. For example, Manson may argue that Jane Doe, much like his allegations against Wood and Gore, had motives to publicly fabricate allegations against him. These allegations could then be presented to suggest a potential pattern of false accusations, affecting Jane Doe's credibility in the eyes of the court if Manson were to prove a coordinated hoax. For example, Manson's lawsuit against Wood and Gore, or even lawsuits previously filed against him, could lead to the discovery of additional evidence or witnesses that may be relevant to Jane Doe's lawsuit. Consider what Manson's attorney, Howard King, had to say in legal filings in this lawsuit back in 2021. Quote, "Defendant Brian Warner denies each and every claim made by plaintiff Jane Doe, Plaintiff's claims are untrue, meritless, and a key component of a coordinated attack by multiple plaintiffs who are cynically and dishonestly seeking to monetize and exploit the Me Too movement. These individuals, including plaintiff, spent months plotting, workshopping, and fine-tuning their stories to turn what were consensual friendships and relationships with Warner from more than a decade ago into twisted tales that bear no resemblance to reality. Without a shred of evidence to support their claims, plaintiff and her co-conspirators are desperately trying to conflate the imagery and artistry of Warner's shock rock stage persona, Marilyn Manson, with fabricated accounts of abuse. Within approximately 2 months of filing this case, plaintiff's scurrilous allegations concerning the groupie video have already been publicly disproven. Think about it this way. If Jane Doe's lawsuit contains significant discrepancies in the timeline of events, it would raise questions. And if she communicated with Manson or others during the period of the alleged incidents, and these communications appear inconsistent with her claims, it will likely be pointed out. Moreover, if Jane Doe had interactions with Manson after the alleged incidents and are inconsistent with what she has claimed, it could become a focal point for Manson's defense, which leads me to inconsistent statements or recollections among witnesses, if applicable, could significantly impact the overall credibility of Jane Doe's claims. In summary, Jane Doe faces a considerable burden of proof in her lawsuit, particularly due to potential conflicts between her public statements in February 2021 and the details in her lawsuit. Additionally, it raises questions that despite her claims of speaking to law enforcement officials, Manson has not faced any criminal charges. Given these factors, it wouldn't be unexpected if Manson's legal team delves into Jane Doe's motives for coming forward, especially considering the timing of her allegations. And Manson's separate lawsuit against Evan Rachel Wood and Ilma Gore alleging a conspiracy, with claims that women were recruited to make allegations of rape and abuse against him. Next, I want to talk about exploring the specific challenges Manson might have. First and foremost, it's crucial to recognize that, legally, Manson is innocent until proven guilty. Despite the media's portrayal of him as guilty, the burden of proof rests on Jane Doe to substantiate her claims. This presumption of innocence presents Manson's defense with the task of demonstrating that the events described by Jane Doe did not occur as she alleges. It becomes particularly intricate when dealing with allegations tied to fragmented or repressed memories, which can be difficult to refute definitively. Additionally, Manson's defense might address the issue of consent. To prove his innocence, Manson may need to provide evidence or build a compelling argument demonstrating that any actions that occurred were consensual and not the result of coercion or abuse. The timeline of events and the credibility of the parties involved will likely also come under scrutiny. Moreover, the broader context of Manson's public image and prior controversies may affect how his case is perceived. Manson has faced allegations and controversies in the past, which could influence public opinion and the court's perception of his character. Navigating these challenges will be essential for Manson's defense, even though, in the eyes of the law, Manson remains innocent until proven guilty, and it is the responsibility of Jane Doe to meet the burden of proof. And some of the same challenges Jane Doe faces in proving her case similarly apply to Manson's efforts to disprove her claims. For example, if Manson's evidence or communications during the alleged incidents confirm Jane Doe's allegations, it could raise concerns about the validity of his defense. This is why it is important to have consistent timelines, evidence, past communications corroborating witnesses, and medical evidence to prove or refute certain claims. And when it comes to Manson, a trial by the mainstream media has already been playing out since February 2021, where he is already portrayed as being guilty. Yet, as far as I can tell, this lawsuit specifically is not even on the media's radar, as the last reports on this lawsuit in the media were from 2 years ago when the lawsuit was originally dismissed. Now, I want to take a few minutes to talk about settlements, because even though we are currently on the path to potentially seeing this go to trial, settlements can occur at any point in time, even during jury deliberations, and it would not be surprising to me that this could settle. But I feel like not many understand this would not be a loss for Manson if Jane Doe chose to settle, but it would be a win. Consider what Southern Law had to say last July about settlements as it pertained to Manson and Jane Doe.
What's interesting to me in this case is that Manson's attorneys reported to the court that they had discussed and reviewed with Manson the possibilities for alternative dispute resolution, like mediation or arbitration or whatever. They had discussed that with him. And then Manson's attorneys indicated they were willing to go to mediation. They reported that to the court. And this led to what I think is a very interesting document, which is the court's order for the case management conference. And look at what it says. It says, the court orders the parties to mediation, possibly global. So the court's ordering you to a mediation, possibly global. What does the court know about the global mediation? I think that follows on some of the comments that at least one of Manson's attorneys had made, that if they could, that some point in the cards, there might be a discussion on how to settle all these cases. Well, that came up in this court's order, that they are going to go to a mediation. The court's ordering them to do that. And maybe that will even be a global mediation. So again, I think some people think that the job of Manson's attorney should be to clear his name or hold the accusers accountable for their terrible behavior. Those are things that they'll do if they need to, or if Manson demands that they do it, they'll pursue those things. But the real objective is to win for him. And winning can be a lot of things. And winning is very rarely having to go in front of a jury and prove your case. I mean, Manson's in several cases now, and this means several juries. He only has to lose at one before he's found to be an abuser and have to pay a lot of money. Can you win all the time in front of every jury? Yeah, I don't know about that. So his lawyers are prepared to do that. The plaintiff's lawyers are prepared to go against him. But it's not an unreasonable strategy for Manson's attorneys to say, is there some way that we can corral this, get all these things into a box and try and deal with them all at one time and get this behind us in a way that will satisfy the plaintiffs enough to make the cases be over and allow our client to get on with his life and just move on. That's not an unreasonable strategy.
The reality is up to 95% of lawsuits settle. And as much as I would like to see a trial play out, it is often not the reality. Consider something I recently learned about settlements from Southern law that I never really understood before. When Esme Bianco settled her lawsuit, it was quoted from Manson's attorney that the settlement was an insurance payout. Meaning, if Manson is using insurance to pay for settlements, it means he likely has to go by what the insurance company says. That is, unless he wants to use his own money. For example, when you are in a car accident, you do not get to control how much or how little the insurance company pays you. They dictate the terms, especially if Jane Doe expresses a willingness to settle the lawsuit. As an example, if Manson does not want to settle or does not agree with his insurance company, he may find himself using his own money for a trial. That is risky for anyone, but especially for a rock star who has been actively unemployed since the allegations in February 2021. The point I am trying to make is that settlements happen often, and to not be surprised if this occurs. Now that I went over a summary of her allegations, the causes of action, legal challenges, and settlements, I want to briefly discuss some of the known inconsistencies in Jane Doe's public statements versus her own lawsuit. First, the matter of repressed memories presents a contradiction when she first disclosed allegations against Manson in February 2021. When she came forward on social media, she also posted on Instagram with her own statement. While I'm not going to read out the full statement, I am going to pull out some quotes of what she had to say in relation to her memories. Here are some of the quotes from her public allegations. I knew this day would come. I've been waiting for it for 10 years. It happened to me, and I witnessed it happening to some of them with my own eyes. 10 years is such a long time to carry such an awful secret. Why did I keep silent all this time? The internal shame runs so deep that even now, 10 years on, I am deeply embarrassed to admit the truth. In her public statements, she implies a level of awareness and knowledge of Manson's alleged abuse, stating that she had been waiting for the day to come and had witnessed incidents. However, in her lawsuit, she claims to have repressed certain aspects of her relationship with Manson, but also recalls specific instances, like the alleged abusive aspects and the trauma caused by watching the groupie video, which she asserts were not repressed. Tying into this is the years of Jane Doe not only talking positively about Manson, but by all appearances, still being seen hanging out with him, or even talking positively about him in interviews and on social media to other fans. For example, in a FMS magazine article from November 2017, Jane Doe lists her top 10 songs. One of them was Manson's song, I Don't Like the Drugs, But the Drugs Like Me. This is what she had to say. Quote, Mechanical Animals was sort of seen as the worst Manson album for a time, but it's actually brilliant and I love how glam he was during this era. Sure, it's a total appropriation of Bowie, but it was sexy, and it really upset a lot of people in white middle America, which gets it bonus points in my book. I love nothing more than boys in makeup and a good mantra. I don't like the drugs, but the drugs like me. Amen. In addition, this singer-songwriter wrote a song called Groupie. For someone to claim to have had a traumatic experience relating to something with the same name, it could be construed that she was inspired by it, rather than traumatized. Either way, it doesn't make sense. Another noteworthy aspect is the timing of the release of a single, just days before the social media allegations emerged. In her social media post related to the song, she explicitly mentioned that it was inspired by her most painful experiences, including instances of sexual assault. Following her social media allegations posted only days later, she took to social media again on February 16, 2021, to discuss the song further. Interestingly, she indicated that the song's filming took place months before, in August 2020, and she expressed her surprise that one of the individuals responsible for the experiences that had inspired the song and video would be publicly named shortly afterward. If the timing sounds odd, it's because it is, and I would expect this to be focused on at a trial. Plus, Jane Doe specifically emphasized in this social media post that she had never met with Evan Rachel Wood, which could be problematic for Jane Doe if Manson has evidence of this not being true from the broken iPad seen in Manson's lawsuit against Evan Rachel Wood and Ilma Gore, which, at this point, would not surprise me if something comes up linking Jane Doe to Evan or Ilma, especially considering the allegations Manson has made of a conspiracy and the existence of a broken iPad with purported evidence of a hoax. Jane Doe's lawsuit frequently references Ashley Walters, portraying her as a key witness to several of her allegations. Given Ashley's former role as Manson's personal assistant, she is expected to testify as a witness regarding the events in question. However, a potential issue arises when examining the contents of Ashley Walters' own lawsuit, as it appears to contradict some of Jane Doe's assertions, particularly concerning timelines. For instance, Jane Doe claims to have moved in with Manson shortly after their initial meeting, which places this around March 2011, and to have moved out sometime in June 2011. This timeline seems to conflict with Esme Bianco's previous lawsuit, where Ashley Walters attempts to back up Esme's June 2011 claims, even though they are both contradictory. This also brings up another element, too, from Esme's lawsuit, since she asserted that she also lived with Manson from April 2011 to June or July 2011. Consequently, these conflicting accounts raise questions about how both women could have lived with Manson during the same period without encountering each other. It's worth noting that Ashley Morgan Smithline, prior to recanting her statements, had similarly claimed to have lived with Manson starting in mid-November 2010 and maintained that she had a 2-year relationship with him. This further complicates the narrative, as it implies that at certain points, three different women were asserting that they lived with Manson concurrently. These complexities become even more intricate when considering Evan Rachel Wood's allegations and her own conflicting timelines. This further underscores the challenges in reconciling the various accounts surrounding Manson's interactions and relationships during the specified timeframes, which will likely help Manson considering the significant inconsistencies in these statements from various public lawsuits. In conclusion, the inconsistencies between Jane Doe's public statements and her lawsuit present a complex challenge to her credibility and the overall narrative of her case. Firstly, her public statements, where she implied awareness of Manson's alleged abuse, seem at odds with her lawsuit's assertion of repressed memories. In her lawsuit, she recalls specific incidents, like the alleged abusive aspects and trauma caused by watching the Groupie video, which she claims were not repressed. Moreover, the timing of her allegations raises questions, especially in light of her social media activity and the release of a single inspired by her alleged traumatic experiences just days before she made her allegations. Her statement that the song's filming took place in August 2020, followed by her purported surprise that Manson was publicly named, seems unusual and might be scrutinized during the trial. Her statement that she had never met Evan Rachel Wood, which, if evidence exists, could be contradicted by any potential evidence found on Ilma Gore's broken iPad, which would affect her credibility. Furthermore, the references to Ashley Walters in Jane Doe's lawsuit raise questions about timelines and the coexistence of multiple women in Manson's life during the same periods, as evidenced by Esme Bianco's and Ashley Morgan Smithline's claims. These other public lawsuits could be used by Manson's defense to show a pattern of further inconsistencies. Finally, the broader context of Manson's legal battles and allegations, as well as his portrayal in the media, could impact how Jane Doe's case is perceived. Manson's attorney's statement about a coordinated attack and the Me Too movement, if proven true, might further erode her credibility. In summary, Jane Doe faces a considerable challenge in reconciling her public statements with her lawsuit's claims, and these inconsistencies may play a pivotal role in Manson's defense strategy. Manson, on the other hand, must contend with the presumption of innocence while addressing the specific challenges presented by Jane Doe's allegations and the broader context of his legal battles and public image. Ultimately, the upcoming trial will provide a platform for both parties to present their cases and for the court to determine the truth of the matter. But keep in mind, this lawsuit can settle at any time, even up to when a jury deliberates. In the next episode of the Marilyn Manson Cases podcast, you can listen to the full lawsuit Jane Doe filed against Marilyn Manson and hear the allegations made in her lawsuit for yourself.